From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, to Washington Watch and the first day of the 116th Congress, where despite rumblings from those who say she is too moderate, the new Democratic majority selected Nancy Pelosi as the House Speaker today. Here's Republican leader Kevin McCarthy handing over the gavel.
In the spirit of a more perfect union and in the unshakable belief that America was, is, and always will be the greatest nation on the face of the earth. And in that spirit, I extend my hand of friendship to every member of this body. And to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, I extend to you this gavel. Thank you. In the spirit of a more perfect union and in the unshakable belief that America was, is, and always will be the greatest nation on the face of the earth. And in that spirit, I extend my hand of friendship to every member of this body. And to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, I extend to you this gavel. Thank you.
The new liberal majority wasted no time in signaling that their priorities would be much different than the Republican-controlled 115th Congress. In their crosshairs are not only the pro-life advancements of the last 2 years, but trying to undo fundamental pro-life measures going back 4 decades. Religious liberty is another target, as are the pro-growth tax cuts. Can they be stopped? The new chairman of the Republican Study Committee, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, joins me in just a moment. And speaking of liberal priorities, Senate liberals have been trying to make a deal with the White House to keep one of their most aggressive activists on the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC. Well, the clock ran out on Kai Feldblum's nomination on the 31st of December. Feldblum has been opposed in the Senate by a handful of Republicans because of her hostility to religious freedom. The senator leading the charge, Mike Lee of Utah, joins me. Also, the frequency of accidentally silencing conservative speech by the social media giants points to either a significant weakness in the application of technology on their part or a hostility to the free flow and exchange of ideas. FRC Sarah Perry joins me with a look at Facebook's alleged accidental censoring of Franklin Graham. And finally, the Supreme Court is poised to rule on what could be the biggest religious liberty case in half a century. The court is slated to hear oral arguments in the Bladensburg Cross case in late February. The World War I memorial in the shape of a cross has been ruled unconstitutional, which, if this ruling is allowed to stand, religious symbols across the nation on public property could be torn down, further eradicating America's Christian heritage. FRC filed a of the Center for Religious Liberty joins me later with the details. The website, TonyPerkins.com, or you can catch up with me on Facebook as well. All right. It's a new Congress, the 116th Congress, to be precise, and we have a changing of the guard. The Democrats are enjoying a majority with its biggest freshman class since Watergate. And Nancy Pelosi got the necessary votes, despite the rumblings, to become the House Speaker once again. Now the Democrats have a majority in the House of Representatives. Joining me now to put the big day into perspective and to forecast what might be ahead is Congressman Mike Johnson from the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee and, as I mentioned, also chairman of the Republican Study Committee. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be with you, as always.
Well, big day on Capitol Hill as really in many ways just almost a flipping. Republicans in the last Congress having 236 members, the Democrats 196. Now today the Democrats have 235, the Republicans 199. What do you make of Nancy Pelosi retaking the gavel? What are you anticipating in the next 2 years?
We anticipate stormy seas ahead. I mean, I think it's correct that many people have forecast that, you know, the next 2 years could present some of the greatest challenges we've faced in the 242-year history of our country. We have divided government. We have a bitter partisan divide in so many ways. And, you know, it's not a it doesn't look good for the next couple of years. Now, what we're going to do, though, Tony, as conservatives in the House, is we look at this as an unprecedented opportunity. We have a real responsibility. We think that we might have what could be the most important moment in the history of our group, the Republican Study Committee, which is the largest caucus of conservatives in Congress, as you know, to provide a steady voice and the intellectual firepower that we really need to defend and advance our core conservative principles. They will be under assault under the Pelosi-led House, and we're gearing up to be ready for that.
Let's talk about some of those assaults. In order to move forward with any legislative initiatives, you have to adopt rules. What do we make of the rules package that the Democrats put forward today?
Well, they've made some changes. Most notably is sort of a protective measure that the newly elected speaker has put in place to further protect herself and her office. It's more difficult to remove the speaker now. They made some procedural changes. They put in some other bells and whistles that will, from their perspective, make it easier for them to move legislation. We expected some of this. Some of it is window dressing for appearances only. But they are going to try to run the table. They've made no bones about that. They basically have two agendas going forward for the next 2 years. One is to make President Donald Trump's life as miserable as possible with endless investigations of all of his personal affairs, his business affairs, his family, and everything else. And number two, to try to roll back many of the great strides that we made in the 115th Congress, the one that we just concluded. We had a remarkable run in the first 2 years of the Trump administration with the Republican-led House and Senate, and now they are determined to try to unwind some of the great strides that we made. So we have an important role to play on defense to try to hold that line. But we're not just going to wander in the wilderness and play defense, Tony. We're going to play offense as well. And in the RSC, the Republican Study Committee, what we're really gearing up to do is to become a real policy shop for the next 2 years to put together our ideas, to implement our conservative values in terms of policy and what that looks like in legislation, move all of that we can, but more realistically prepare a package, a playbook, so to speak, so that we can run and be prepared to run when we take back the majority in 2 years, which I think I have some confidence that we'll do.
Two of those issues that you brought up, I want to talk about because they tried to kind of put a lid on talk about impeachment during the election. But today that has bubbled back up to be, looks like, a top priority for the Democrats to pursue impeachment of Donald Trump.
It is. And, it was noted that Speaker Pelosi said today in an interview or sometime this morning that even the indictment of the president may not be off the table, but that's still up for discussion, I think, is what she said. Look, there's no secret that probably a majority of the Democrat caucus in the House, at least, would love to impeach the president. The only thing holding them back is the political calculation right now. They're going to place a lot of emphasis on what the Mueller investigation concludes or comes out with, which we expect perhaps in February, early March. And I think they'll make an ultimate decision at that point. If there is an impeachment proceeding, it will come through the committee that I serve on, the House Judiciary Committee, as a first stop. And we're gearing up for that. I think people can say a lot of things about the president, but I don't think we've not seen any evidence at all that he's come anywhere close to any impeachable offense. So it will be an important philosophical battle, an important political battle, and one that I think will unnecessarily divide the country even further, and that's unfortunate.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Mike Johnson, my guest. Big day on Capitol Hill, the 116th Congress getting underway. Mike, you talked about some of the advancements, and I know that a lot of people would have liked to have seen more, including yourself and me, in the 115th Congress. But a lot was accomplished. We've talked about that over the last couple of years. But one area that we've seen advancements when you look at both what Congress did and what the president did was on the issue of pro-life, the sanctity of human life, the reestablishing of the Mexico City, which the president did, actually expanding it beyond what Ronald Reagan had. Nancy Pelosi and crew have their crosshairs on those pro-life measures, not only wanting to just to eliminate what was done in the last 2 years, but really go back four decades and force taxpayer funding of abortion.
They do, and that's one of the first battles that we'll have right out of the blocks here. They've made no bones about it. You know, I think part of the problem that Pelosi has is that she has to respond to the increasingly radical fringe left element in her party. And there's this new sort of, rabid progressive movement. It's a charge to the left that's being led by some of the incoming freshmen and some of the others. And they're going to do their best to push the Democrats all the way off the cliff, I think, from our perspective. So, on the pro-life measures, on the defense of religious liberty, on the defense of so much of what most Americans hold dear. I mean, you look at the principles that have made us the greatest nation in the history of the world: devotion to God, individual freedom, limited government, you know, the rule of law and fiscal responsibility and free markets, all these things, human dignity and the sanctity of every human life. All of that is in jeopardy right now. Now, thankfully, we'll have a bulwark. We'll have a stop in the Senate. And, of course, the president wouldn't sign any of that nonsense into law if it came to his desk anyway. But we're going to have a real battle in the House, and I think the American people need to be paying attention, because this is a bellwether of what's to come. You know, politics is downstream from culture, and this is what we're seeing right now.
You know, I never, of course, in the last couple of years, we never thought we would be talking about the Senate being the conservative backstop in Washington, D.C.
Right.
But it's exactly what it is. And Mitch McConnell, I think, is poised to do that. I think we've added some new, really good members to the Senate, like Josh Hawley from Missouri. But what do our listeners need to be doing? I mean, let's talk about that for a few minutes. What do they need to be doing to be prepared? Because we're talking about some very fundamental things: the sanctity of human life, religious liberty, those things that this administration, by inch has been able to advance. Nancy Pelosi is going to try to undo that and more.
She will. And I think that what concerns citizens, what Christians, what people who believe in these ideals that you and I articulate all the time, what they need to be doing is being very engaged. It should be a standard course of action to call, you know, your representatives in Congress, no matter what district you live in. They need to hear from you. You need to be engaged. You need to be involved on the local level, on the state level, and watching what's happening with politics and policy there in your own backyard. We have an obligation. We have a responsibility as citizens in the country, also for Christians as citizens of the kingdom. And if we're not engaged, then we're derelict in our duty. These are the kinds of things that happen. You know, we say all the time, elections have consequences. When we're not engaged, people are elected who do not share those American values. And they're pushing the mother value. That's what we're facing right now.
Yeah.
And we've got to be very involved.
Now, without question, praying and participating. Mike Johnson, as always, great to have you on the program. And again, congratulations on being elected as chairman of the Republican Study Committee.
Thanks, Tony. Talk to you soon.
All right, folks, look. Yeah, it's going to be a difficult 2 years, but we have a— that doesn't change our obligation to stand for and speak for truth. We need to be praying and we need to be participating. And that's why I'm glad you're listening to Washington Watch. Resolve to invite others to listen and to participate and to be a part of preserving this great republic. All right, coming up next, we'll look at the nomination of a radical leftist named Kai Feldblum.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay, I mentioned this at the top of the program. Kai Feldblum, she was the author of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, one of the key authors driving that. That goes back a number of years. Congress has repeatedly rejected that measure because it's anti-religious. It attacks religious faith. Well, in 2010... Barack Obama nominated her to the employment EEOC. Now, couldn't get her through. And that's when the Democrats controlled the Senate. And so he made a recess appointment. That was Harry Reid was controlling the Senate. And she was so radical, couldn't get her through. Well, then Harry Reid changed the rules so only 50 votes were necessary for a or majority for a presidential nominee. So got her on then to the commission. But her views, she has attempted to unilaterally impose the concepts found in the ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, on businesses across America, basically weaponizing the workplace against religious freedom. Well, fortunately, there have been those who are the stalwarts of religious freedom and understanding of the importance of that in the Senate that have been blocking her. And as a result, nomination expired on December 31st, but she could be renominated. Joining me now to talk about it is the one who's been leading the charge, Senator Mike Lee of Utah. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's good to be with you as always.
Well, first, let me just say thank you for leading the charge because you've been one of the leading voices in the Senate for understanding religious liberty. And you've seen, we've all seen in the last, under the last administration, how the workplace has been weaponized as a tool against religious freedom.
That's exactly right. And it's something we've all got to be concerned about. And, you know, Ms. Feldblum's views on using government power to undermine religious liberty are too extreme and they're contrary to existing law. This is really important for me personally. It's important for the American people generally. In my case, I'm a religious minority myself, and I'm the descendant of people who were ordered exterminated by the governor of Missouri on October 27th, 1837. Religious intolerance is something that can't be tolerated in this country. And what I see is a growing wave of a sentiment in this country wherein a lot of people are suggesting that on the basis of someone's religious beliefs, they can be subjected to adverse government decision making. because of those beliefs. That's wrong. We can't let that happen, not on our watch.
Now, are you also finding that there are some that are just saying, oh, what's the big deal? Just not understanding the importance of that fundamental first freedom, the freedom of religion?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think a lot of people see that because today's discrimination perhaps doesn't take on as much of an overtly hostile face. It's not burning crosses in people's yards necessarily. It's not necessarily attacking people overtly on the basis of where they go to church or whether they go to church at all. It is regarded as a more friendly sort of gentle nudge in the direction of just declining some access to a government program or favorable tax treatment or something like that. That is itself a form of religious intolerance, and it's one that we can't accept.
Well, let's talk about the status of this nomination, Senator Lee. You put a block on it, which the clock ran out essentially because it is the end of the year. She has to be renominated by the White House in order to fill this role. Now, it's five members on this commission. Under this president, three Republicans, two Democrats. This was kind of, one, as we understand, one of those deals where the Democrats want a particular candidate. But she's so far outside the mainstream and 180 degrees from what this administration has emphasized when it comes to religious freedom. There's a good cause not to see her renominated.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I hope she's not renominated. Look, there's no doubt this is a well-trained scholar. There's no doubt that she's got the right to have the views that she has. They're well outside the mainstream, and I don't regard them as sufficiently consistent with our robust tradition of religious freedom in this country. She's written that she sees a conflict between religious freedom and sexual liberty as sort of a zero-sum game where a gain for one side necessarily entails a corresponding loss for the other side. I see no reason why that should be the case. Constitutionally, it can't ever be the case. And I think that is a fundamentally incompatible idea as far as we talk about our nation's long tradition of pluralism and religious freedom.
Well, and religious freedom obviously being clearly articulated in the Constitution as the First Amendment to the Constitution in something that we don't have to guess about. It's very clear. It's right there in black and white. What do people need to do to ensure that the workplace is not weaponized with ideas coming from people like Kai Feldblum?
Well, first of all, I think we always need to be on the lookout for those who view there as being a constant conflict between sexual liberty and religious freedom. And I do think that we should continue to encourage President Trump in choosing all of his nominees, including his nominees for the EEOC, to make sure that they don't hold these views. We have to remember that when Godzilla steps on your house, it's not necessarily that Godzilla hates you specifically or is singled out you because he specifically wants to eat you. It's because he's Godzilla and he's huge, and your house happens to be in the way. This is how government works. When government gets too big and too powerful, it doesn't bother to notice the fact that it's stepping on someone's house or house of worship. And we've got to be very careful of that.
I guess it would also be helpful, Senator Lee, if other senators were standing front and center with you on this nomination, clearly communicating that we're not going to advance the nomination of those individuals who are hostile toward religious freedom.
That's exactly right. Contact your senator. Tell your senator that you expect, whether it's an EEOC nominee or anyone else, you don't want them to have views like those of Kai Feldblum.
All right. Senator Mike Lee, as always, great to have you on the program. And again, thanks for standing firm for religious freedom.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Okay, folks, don't go away. When we come back, big tech companies, social media companies, accidentally censoring conservatives, or are they just hostile to the free flow of ideas? That's next when Sarah Perry of FRC joins me. Don't go away.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, during the Christmas break, when we were, Washington Watch was kind of on hiatus, Washington Update was on hiatus, everybody was kind of enjoying themselves, Facebook suspended the account of evangelist, our good friend, Franklin Graham. And it was, here's what it was for. It was for a 2016 post, two-year-old post, about North Carolina's bathroom bill, HB2. Now, Facebook blocked him for 24 hours, but then rescinded the ban and apologized. They said it was an accident. Well, here's the question. The frequency of these accidental incidents of silencing conservative speech by the social media giants points to either a significant weakness in their application of the technology that they champion, or it's a hostility to the free flow and exchange of ideas. So which is it? Well, joining me now to talk about it is Sarah Perry. She is the coordinator for the Family Research Council Action, who oversees research and candidate endorsements and works with our coalitions. Sarah is an attorney with a degree from the University of Virginia School of Law and graduated degree in journalism from Liberty University. Sarah, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Okay, Sarah, what do we make of Facebook's censoring of Franklin Graham, taking him off and putting him into a timeout for 24 hours?
Well, I think it's definitely worth noting the timing on this. So in November of last year, Facebook released its new content governance policy, which was specifically addressed toward preventing incidents that would make it an unsafe space online. While Zuckerberg stated that his desire was to prevent real-world harm, they wanted to err on the side of giving people a voice. Now, during Christmas week, Franklin Graham's post, 2 years old, as you've noted, an individual who has 7.5 million Facebook followers, who's been fondly called America's pastor, disappeared from Facebook. This was a post that was 2 years old on a piece of legislation already passed, I might add. But not coincidentally, 3 days later, the New York Times dropped a bombshell study on December 27th. Entitled Facebook's Secret Rulebook for Global Political Speech. And this is what the report made clear, and that's going to shed some light on what may have happened to Reverend Graham. There are 15,000 moderators working worldwide to police this, and they have content moderators that are given sometimes no more than 10 seconds. They are incentivized to work quickly and be as thorough as possible, but in some instances are actually given financial incentives to get through the material as quickly as possible. Now, Facebook is a global presence. It is used by 2 billion users a month. They are a $5 billion per profit quarterly company. And they have people who are at the very lowest ground levels of outsourced data policing what constitutes speech. I do not believe it is coincidental that on 11/15, Facebook announced their new content moderation and their content policy guidelines. And within 5 weeks, our friend Franklin Graham had a post disappear on what can be deemed politically incorrect subject matter.
Well, what's curious about this, Sarah, is that, like you said, it was 2 years old. Are they going back trying to build a case against people so that they have they have justification for taking them off or removing their post?
Well, all three of the big tech testifiers on the Hill, from Mark Zuckerberg to Sundar Pichai to Jack Dorsey of Twitter, have all indicated that Silicon Valley has an overt left-leaning bias. We understand that. I don't think anyone makes any bones about it. So for a two-year-old post to be caught up in that net indicates two things. Either, number one, their algorithm is flawed, and Zuckerberg and his team do use a form of artificial intelligence to perform top-level analysis to catch things in the big net, as it were. And in addition to that, the individuals that they have at the lower levels who are then tasked with looking over the shoulders of the computers catching it are subject to their own biases, which is much more likely, particularly considering the fact that we know some of the big left-leaning organizations have represented partnerships with big tech companies such as YouTube through Google, such as Twitter. So we understand that there's not only a bias, they're going to the wrong people to help them content modify in the first place.
Well, and I should mention the original post that Franklin Graham put up was actually responding to Bruce Springsteen's decision to cancel his North Carolina concert over the passage of HB2. And this is what he wrote. Bruce Springsteen, a longtime gay rights activist, has canceled his North Carolina concert. He says that NC law HB2 to prevent men from being able to use women's restrooms and locker rooms is going backwards. Well, to be honest, we need to go back to God, end quote. That was his post. That's what Facebook went after.
The offending post, right? So that puts us up against the brick wall of one of the largest conservative speakers and evangelists in the country being surprisingly censored, perhaps accidentally, but more likely from the standpoint of that left-wing bias. And it's got us requiring ourselves to push for more transparency in governance and seek out that First Amendment standard to protect our interests if any of us use an online platform.
Well, it's going to take everyone working collectively together to make sure that freedom remains intact. Sarah Perry, as always, great to have you in the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. To find out more about Sarah, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, will the Supreme Court rule that crosses on public property are legitimate and can remain?
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, does a memorial cross, it's nearly 100 years old, that was dedicated to the memory of local soldiers who perished in World War I, violate the First Amendment's prohibition against government establishment of religion? Well, that's what a court has decided. It's the Bladensburg World War I Veterans Memorial. It's also called the Peace Cross. It was erected nearly 100 years ago for the purpose of honoring 49 men from Prince George's County, Maryland, who served their country during World War I. Now, the 40-foot-tall cross, surrounded by other monuments memorializing armed conflicts, I mean, there's no loudspeaker proselytizing from the top of the cross. No evangelizing or no proclamation that the Christian faith is the government-sanctioned religion. It's just a cross there as a memorial. It does not coerce citizens into participating in religious exercise or practice. Well, but this is where we've come. I mean, think about this. It's been there for 100 years, and no one ever thought that that cross violated the Constitution. But there's been a series of court cases that have led us to this point. And so now this case has been taken up by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has taken the case. They're going to hear oral arguments the end of February. Friend of the court amicus briefs are being filed. Amici briefs are being filed right now. In fact, the Family Research Council has filed one of those briefs. And joining us now to talk about that, Travis Weber, who serves as the Vice President for Policy at the Family Research Council and oversees our Center for Religious Liberty, was a part of helping craft this brief that we filed. And in addition, there was another brief that we were involved in with General Boykin from retired military generals. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. So did that adequately describe the situation as it presently stands?
Yes. Currently, the briefs are being filed. We're going to hear arguments before the court in a few months, and then we'll get a decision a few months after that, sometime April, May, June, definitely before June 2019, we'll have a decision from the court. And, you know, the case is really important because it goes far beyond just whether memorials like this are going to be able to stand, or I should say could go beyond that, because the court is being asked to look at the standard for the Establishment Clause and how to analyze these memorials and other public religious displays that are challenged. I would submit that it's possible the court's decision could even affect other Establishment Clause claims, which we run into every day, where someone complains about a public prayer, a school situation where a coach is praying. It's possible the court could really clarify in a good way these public displays of religion do not violate the Establishment Clause, and I really hope they do so.
Yeah, it could be a very big case. I mean, this could be, and I emphasize could be the biggest case on religious liberty in a half a century if the court, you know, rules aggressively on what the Establishment Clause means and, in fact, could usurp some previous tests like the Lemon Test. However, the court tends to be, especially the current court, tends to be very narrow in their rulings, which could, just like we saw on, the Jack Phillips case, as we've seen even with the Obamacare case, it seems to leave a lot of gray area, a lot of questions unanswered.
It's true. I think I feel pretty confident about the current makeup of the court as it concerns the Establishment Clause and this case. The court is being asked to consider, I mean, the questions being briefed by the parties include whether, this is unconstitutional just because it's shaped like a cross. Secondly, whether the standard for the Establishment Clause claim should be the Lemon Test or tests under other cases, including the Town of Greece case, which recently the court decided based on whether a practice was rooted in tradition and historically practiced under the Establishment Clause as consistent with that clause. And so much more favorable test to public religious displays. So the court is really – they're going to be confronted with the standard to be decided. And many amicus briefs in this case are addressing these issues. There are many amicus briefs calling for a reexamination of Establishment Clause law. Our brief sort of emphasizes a number of those points, but we point out the public role of religion in society, the special role it has in the military, and how naturally that includes commemoration of those who've passed away. So our brief really provides support for the ability of the court to find a public role of religion as perfectly consistent with the Establishment Clause. And I think, they really tie themselves in a knot, judges do, when they try to, rule in a way that excludes these monuments from the public square. They really get into all sorts of situations, and the Lemon Test really leaves way too much discretion in the hands of judges, as we saw with the Fourth Circuit's decision striking down the memorial. It looks quite silly. And so I really feel good about this case. I'm glad we're involved in it, and I really hope for a big, broad ruling from the court.
I mean, Travis, this could really be a textbook case about the courts and why the courts are important and what we see under the Trump administration in appointing strict constructionists to the courts. Because I go back to what I said at the very beginning, this has been standing for 100 years. And no one until recently ever thought that this was a violation of the Constitution. But we see this kind of gradual progression of hostility toward the public display of religion. We see this activism in the courts that has brought us to this point to where a memorial cross that no one ever thought, gave a second thought about it being unconstitutional, is now at risk of being torn down by court order. And the ramifications of this will not stop with the Bladesburg Cross case, with the Peace Cross. This could go to Arlington National Cemetery. It could be every religious display on public property.
Yeah, I mean, this is really silly when you think about, the Fourth Circuit's suggestion here that they possibly shave off the arms of the cross to make it compliant with the First Amendment. Crosses have been used to commemorate those who have fallen in battle for centuries in the history of our own country and in other countries. Those who have fallen in World War I lie in Europe with crosses commemorating where they lie to this day. And you mentioned Arlington National Cemetery. The implications are really silly. And I think it's silly when you consider that this might be struck down or removed. The fact that we are looking at the lack of complaints for decades, and then all of a sudden a complaint being considered with validity itself is kind of ridiculous. The fact that there have never been any complaints, the fact that historically these practices were okay, is a very strong argument in favor of the constitutionality of these crosses and other memorials. The Town of Greece case looked at historical practice. Town of Greece case is a good template for the court to use in how it might consider Establishment Clause issues more broadly. And so there are many, many reasons for the court, and I feel good if we have a majority of justices that are going to see this the right way. Things looking good for the court to decide in favor of the proper role of religion in the public square. Doesn't mean people are forced into practices against their will. People shall not be coerced, but that doesn't mean you remove religion from a public square. You have a role for religion, and we allow everyone to live out their beliefs and practice them peacefully, but that means religion can play a part in the public square.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, my guest. We're discussing a amicus brief that the Family Research Council filed in the Bladensburg Cross case. Oral arguments will be heard at the end of February before the Supreme Court. You know, Travis, as Christians, and this, look, the cross is a Christian symbol. Okay, now it's not, you know, may not necessarily be erected as an evangelistic tool, but you know, just when people are killed in accidents, you see alongside the highway crosses because people find solace in the fact that we know there's more to life than this, and people hope and pray, and sometimes they have certainty that their loved one is on in heaven with their Creator, and they will see them again, and that's the comfort that we find in the cross, because the cross is that which God reached down to man to redeem us and to give us hope and purpose in life. And so that's, you know, the cross is reflective of that, especially in Western society, where Christianity was really at the core of the founding of Western civilization. But it's also important from a Christian perspective, because some Christians say, oh, what's, you know, why fight over these memorials? What difference does it make? Well, it makes a huge difference. In fact, you see all throughout Scripture, where these displays, these monuments, are for subsequent generations to ask the question, what's that about? And if we see all of these things eradicated, removed, we lose who we are. We are a nation that was heavily influenced and founded on Christian principles. And if we allow those who are hostile to that faith to remove everything from the public square, subsequent generations will not be prompted to ask that question.
Yeah, no, Tony, I completely agree. And I think so often we take for granted the knowledge that we have received in the time and place in which we live through – that's been passed down through memorials, through books, through educational institutions. We know so much because it's been preserved, memorialized in some fashion – and passed on to us. And we often take that for granted. These memorials are one way of passing that knowledge on. They memorialize those who have fallen in World War I. They educate us on what they did and remind us of the role that that community in Bladensburg gave, provided the sacrifice of those service members going off to war and losing their lives in battle. This is a tremendous thing to be memorialized, and we shouldn't forget it. We shouldn't stop memorializing it. And it's perfectly normal, as you point out, perfectly proper to memorialize them through the prevailing religious sentiment in the shape of a cross. One of the points in our brief, in the first section of our brief, is that religion naturally comes to the surface in any society. So you go to Israel, you expect to be confronted with symbols of its Jewish identity. You go to a Muslim country, you go to Iraq or Afghanistan, where we, you know, the United States has been involved in recent years. They commemorate Islam, they make note of Islam as part of their religious identity in their constitutions because of the religious makeup of those societies, and so on with Europe. Greece makes note of its Christian identity and makeup. The United States, we naturally have a Christian history. It naturally comes to the fore, and this is something we really point out in our brief because, you know, the parties are going to be focusing more on the history. We really emphasize the religious nature, a religious identity that's interwoven with the public profession of that identity in the shape of this cross in this monument. This is something we can't separate from who we are as a people, nor should we want to, nor is it inconsistent with the Establishment Clause.
Right. That does not run afoul of the Establishment Clause. The Establishment Clause prohibits the government from coercing its citizens into directly supporting a church through taxation or mandating church attendance or worship or saying this is the religion. It does not prohibit the government from public displaying a symbol that partakes of both the secular and the religious. I mean, in fact, the late Chief Justice was once wrote, simply having religious content or promoting a message consistent with a religious doctrine does not run afoul of the Establishment Clause. Now, Travis, I think you touched on this, but this is an opportunity for the court to get it right and revisit what does the Establishment Clause mean?
Yeah, no, very much so. I mean, the problem with the Lemon Test, the Lemon Test is what has been used to look at Establishment Clause issues in the past few decades. And the problem is that it's very vague. It leaves a lot of discretion in the hands of judges. Under that test, you look at whether there is a secular purpose. You look at whether the action has an effect of advancing or inhibiting religion. And then you look at whether there's excessive entanglement with religion. Well, what does all that mean? And even though we have case law, even though we have cases that have been decided according to the standard, there is so much gray area, so much discretion in the hands of judges, so much area in which they can act and say, well, I'm going to decide that this X, Y, or Z symbol or religious practice violates the Lemon Test and therefore violates the Establishment Clause. That doesn't get it right. That doesn't get the Establishment Clause right according to an originalist view, according to how the founders would have wanted it. It doesn't get it right when you look at the clause under that standard. So when we talk about getting it right, I am very hopeful that this court is going to look at this issue and say, we need to be faithful to an originalist view of the Establishment Clause. And Tony, as we've talked about before, this is why it's so important to have originalist judges, originalist judicial nominees. And we're going to continue to see this arise. This case makes that point.
Travis Weber, as always, great to have you on, and great work on the brief, you and your team. And, of course, we'll be tracking this closely once the oral arguments are presented as the court moves toward a decision.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Travis Weber, to find out more about Travis and his work, his team does on religious liberty, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I'll just underscore what Travis said about the originalists on the court. This is where the conservatives, the evangelicals that supported Donald Trump saw the big picture, where he pledged and actually put forth a list of candidates that would be conservative justices for the court. This is the result. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.